Dennis Lindsay made bigoted remarks in my exit interview while conversing with Quinn Snyder. If you say one more word, I'll cut your black ass and send you back to Louisiana. End of tweet. And it's hard to read that.
Yeah.
Because again, I have a lot of respect for Dennis Lindsay. I don't know how to feel about that.
Yeah.
Because, hey, I guess the question right off the jump here, Jake, do you believe that Dennis Lindsay said that?
I have a tough time believing that he said that, mostly because he just doesn't have a big history. You know, he doesn't. It's not like, you know, Dennis Lindsay is known as being a racist or anything like that. So I think it's really important to look at a guy's record and say, has he ever done this before? Have we ever heard anything like this? And if he has, and I'm missing it, you know, please in the comments, let us know. But I've never heard of Dennis Lindsay doing anything like that. And I just think that in today's culture, we have to be really careful not to just, you know, go head over heels on one tweet, you know? And I'm not trying to minimize what Elijah's saying, but what I am saying is that, you know, it's hearsay. How do we know that it's true? How, like, it's not like there's a recording, you know? It's not like he's got it on tape or you know, Quinn's come out and said, yeah, I'll back that story, you know? So that's what I struggle with. Like, obviously, logically speaking, it doesn't seem smart that Elijah would just come out and say this for no reason, you know? People don't just come out and make these kind of accusations for no reason. So there's some of that. But I just think that, you know, Dennis has never done anything like that in his past that I'm aware of. So it's hard for me to just, you know, right off the top be like, yeah, he's a racist and, you know, we need to get him fired. Like, I can't do that yet. I'm not there.
I have a hard time with that. And I'm not saying I need proof. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm not saying Elijah Millsap is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is, I need more than that. Dennis Lindsay is a guy, and I don't know Dennis very well. I happen to cover him. He was always very gracious to me. Now, is he going to call me, quote, black ass back to Louisiana?
Mm-hmm.
No, mainly because I'm not black. Does he speak in that kind of colorful language behind the scenes? I don't know. But what I do know is that integrity is defined by what you do when nobody's looking.
Mm-hmm.
And if it were three men in a room, two of them were white and one of them were black, and somebody, you know, told the black guy, we're going to send your black ass back to Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
that's racial abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Jazz need to look into that. I think the Utah Jazz as an organization need to speak one-on-one with Elijah Millsap. I think they need to talk to Quinn Snyder and ask him if he recalls an incident like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think, by the way, why would Elijah Millsap make this up and why would he do it now?
And that's the concerning part. That's the concerning part. Why would somebody make these accusations just out of the blue and just make them up, you know, for no reason? That's the part where I'm like, okay, well, these are really serious accusations. So it's a two-way street, you know? Why would he say it for no reason, obviously? But then also, you know, we can't just go out on a limb and just believe him outright without any kind of proof or any kind of anything, you know, because there's nothing right now.
That is a very serious accusation.
Yeah. I mean, that's a career-ending accusation.
It is. And, you know, I think one of the things that a lot of people don't consider or think about is that you have a situation with the Utah Jazz where you already have a stigma that, oh, well, it's Salt Lake City. Those are white folks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's already a stigma that black NBA free agents won't be coming to Salt Lake City.
Right.
Where's Shimmer?
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the...
It is.
That's the stigma.
It is.
And so stories like this, if you are a black NBA player, my guess is your tendency is to believe this.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it happened or not, I think it's incredibly damaging to the Jazz. And I just don't know why Elijah Millsap would make this up. Because it's not like the guy's trying to get back in the league.
Uh-huh.
It's not like he has a whole hell of a lot to gain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't know. What do you do? If you're the Jazz, what do you do with this?
Yeah, I think you got to say you're launching an investigation. You're going to talk to everybody that was involved in that meeting. And I think that, you know, teams would be smart to tape exit interviews, you know? Like, I think that in today's world, when people are making accusations like this, it forces you to put everything on tape so you have proof that it wasn't said. So, yeah, I really don't know. This is an impossible situation. There's no good answer here. There's nothing great to say. There's nothing that's, you know, that's easy. It's just like, hey, like Elijah said this, we got to look into it now. We have a responsibility to do an investigation, to talk to Dennis, to talk to Quinn, to talk to Elijah. And that's that, you know, and in that investigation, the problem is that if Quinn and, you know, Dennis are both like, no, that didn't happen, you know, and Elijah's like, yeah, it did. Well, then what do you do? I don't know what you do. I mean,
I don't know. But he said, she said, he said that he said.
Yeah, I mean, why?
But no,
why
he didn't isn't going to get to the bottom of this.
Why? The question at the end of the day, whether we're talking in criminal investigation or racial abuse accusations, is why Elijah's word should not, there should not be put more weight, we should not put more weight on Elijah's word rather than Dennis Lindsay's and Quinn Snyder's. Because to this point, they've never done anything like this.
But the other thing that you cannot do here, and I think this is way too often that this happens,
mm-hmm.
The other thing you cannot do here is just write this off as, no, it didn't happen. Elijah's just looking for attention.
I agree.
Because we say that about everything, whether it's race, a job, you know, lawsuits, whatever. You know, hey, like, look at our country right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're going through, well, the election was stolen. Stop the steal. Well, you can't, if somebody says, well, the election was stolen, you can't just say, no, it wasn't. Let's move on. Mm-hmm. You need to investigate it.
And it was.
And it was investigated. No evidence was found. Elijah Millsap deserves to be heard on this.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's no evidence found, okay. But the only thing that troubles me about this, what does Elijah Millsap have to lose by making an accusation like this?
Nothing.
What does Dennis Lindsay have to lose by Elijah Millsap making an accusation like this?
Lots.
Everything. Everything. Most notably, his reputation.
Yeah.
Is what he has to lose. And I think this is something that, man, I just...
It's troubling.
I don't love it.
Yeah.
I don't like it anyway, because if it's true, it sucks. If it's a lie, it sucks.
Yeah.
There's no good outcome here. There's no winner here. Does Elijah Millsap get some kind of vindication? Let's say it's true. Let's assume it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Does Elijah Millsap get some kind of vindication?
I suppose so. I guess that's why you would release the comments.
Yeah.
You know, I that's the troubling part. Like, you're right. There's no good outcome. No good outcome.
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero good outcome.
Yeah.
Which is not the same thing that you can say about the way the Jazz played last night,
mm-hmm.
and the way the Jazz Laker game ended.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got to tell you, this was as good of an outcome as the Jazz could have hoped for.
Yeah.
The Utah Jazz absolutely dominated the LA Lakers. But Jake, was it only because the Lakers were shorthanded?
Well, no. I mean, you know, the Jazz were making their shots. There's no question about that. You know, I think that when you make 53s over a two-game span, you're obviously, you know, the whole team is on fire. And I think it is an impressive feat, no doubt about it. I think last night, the thing that was so interesting to me, and we talk about this almost on a daily basis when we talk Jazz, is that you can't give them space to shoot their shots. You know, you can't give them space around the three-point arc, and that's all the Lakers did last night. For whatever reason, the Lakers decided that it would be a good idea to collapse on the paint consistently instead of being strong at the perimeter and, you know, going from there. You know, yesterday on the show, we specifically talked about how Montrezl Harrell was going to be on Rudy, and he was going to have to work that matchup on both ends of the floor. And I feel like that didn't really happen the way the Lakers would have wanted it to happen. You know, you didn't get, you know, yeah, you did get, there was some early foul trouble for the Jazz a little bit, but not too much, and that was one area that I was really looking for with the Lakers to try and win this game. You know, if you're the Lakers, your team is shorthanded, you've got injuries to AD and Schroeder, you know, you got to find a way to kind of level the playing field here because the Jazz are fully healthy, and they didn't do that last night. And so, again, I think the lesson we learned last night watching that game is you can't give the Jazz breathing room on the arc. I mean, you know, most of those shots were wide-open looks, just wide-open. You know, guys got to take, what, 5 or 6 strides on defense just to get back into the airspace of the shooter. That's a wide open three in the NBA, and there were tons of those last night.
Well, and the one that stands out to you is the Bogdanovich corner three, where Marcus Morris is just lets him stand there and shoot it.
Yeah.
I mean, the Lakers missed Dennis Schroeder. That, do you want to know what I take out of this game from last night about the Lakers?
Mm-hmm.
Dennis Schroeder's a really important part of what the LA Lakers are doing, especially defensively. They have guys who can bring the ball up. They don't have guys who can defend with tenacity the way that Dennis Schroeder does.
Yeah.
And they don't have guys who will fulfill their role the way Dennis Schroeder does. And I think the thing that really stands out to me is that the Lakers missed Dennis Schroeder last night. Now, obviously, they're going to miss Anthony Davis. He's one of the best four or five combo guys in the NBA.
Right.
But Anthony Davis alone doesn't win them that game or stop the Jazz from doing what they were doing.
Right.
But Dennis Schroeder and AD together, I think, probably do.
Yeah, I think that changes the outcome of the game. You know, obviously, I'm not going to confidently sit here and say the Lakers win the game either way, but I do think that, you know, when you look at the way that Anthony Davis and Dennis Schroeder with LeBron can control the pace of a game, you're not going to play that frenetic pace on defense that they constantly find themselves playing. I mean, they're essentially on defense. The Lakers are just running around with their heads cut off. You know, I mean, that's essentially what their defense is right now, because they don't have their starters. The chemistry is not there. So you get a guy like Marcus Morris standing on the block on the weak side, watching a great shooter in the league in Bogdanovich shoot a wide open three. And so it's not, I don't want this to come off like I'm trying to take something from the Jazz last night, because I'm not. They still had to make those shots. They played great offense. They got a ton of good looks in the paint as well. So they took care of their business, you know, and to be honest with you, it's really nice to see them not playing down to an opponent. Like, hey, whether it's a hurt Lakers team or, you know, it's the best team in the league or whatever, you know, we're going to play our game to the best of our ability. And I think that's a tip of the cap to Quinn Snyder. And I think that the Jazz are just in a really great place right now. And overall, I hope that when they see a healthy Clippers team again, when they see a truly healthy Lakers team and they see the Nets, that they play this brand of basketball. Because I think if they do, they have a shot to go to the finals. But they have to consistently play this well. So we'll see what happens coming out of the All-Star break, because that's really one of the only hurdles that I see for them right now.
Yeah, I don't buy for a second that the Jazz will be able to play this style of basketball in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think postseason basketball, one, every game is a different game in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
Because teams are too good. They evolve too quickly. They learn too quickly. They make adjustments minute to minute, let alone game to game.
Yes.
So I think it's very difficult for the Jazz to believe, or they would be foolish to believe, that Bogdanovich is going to stand in the corner and shoot open threes with 3 feet of clearance.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. What happens against the Lakers? I don't know. I mean, does Anthony Davis ever get back at 100%? I would guess not. Calf strains don't heal well. They take an extraordinary amount of time to heal. And when the Achilles tendon's involved, it's just not worth the risk.
Yeah.
So the Jazz either go out and play this style of basketball and thump the Lakers,
mm-hmm.
or Anthony Davis comes back healthy with Dennis Schroeder, and this is a completely different game and a completely different seven-game series.
A completely different conversation.
Yeah, so I think it'll be interesting. But the lesson here is clear. Teams that play at pace, that use a smaller lineup, make life very difficult on the Jazz.
Yeah.
And even inside of this game, you look at the box from last night, and I look at the fact that you have guys like Montrezl Harrell, 16 points and 6 boards in just 22 minutes.
It's a good game.
He's a 6'7" center.
Yeah.
Who is going to give the Jazz trouble.
And he's strong as hell, too.
Yeah, and guys like Rudy Gobert, who, by the way,
bro, better be careful guarding LeBron out on the perimeter, my guy.
LeBron dropped him.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's like, oh, it doesn't matter. LeBron missed a shot. Oh, it matters. It matters.
You're telling me that Rudy doesn't matter to Rudy?
Yeah, well, I'm guessing it does. And the thing that I want people to remember is somebody's got to figure out how to stop all this switching in the NBA.
Yeah.
Because, like, we watched it last night. The Suns and the Hornets.
Mm-hmm.
Hornets win that game. And a lot of it is because the Suns couldn't stop switching off of LaMelo to put guys like DeAndre Ayton, who's already a terrible defender,
mm-hmm.
But then you switch him on to LaMelo Ball, and he has no chance.
Well, and I think the thing with the league right now is that's – like in the NHL, when you go on the power play, you have an advantage, right? You're 5-on-4. That's what they're doing in the NBA. They're creating the matchup that is most advantageous to them. We've been seeing that in the league for, you know, probably the last 30 years, man. I mean, that's just how the game is played. And I think that, you know, if you're – I think the issue is not switching everything. The issue is the help defense off the switch. So if you're going to switch DeAndre Ayton onto LaMelo, then you got to help DeAndre when LaMelo inevitably hits him with the crossover and goes by him. You can't just let LaMelo have a free run at the basket.
Well, and what did LaMelo do?
He dunked it. Yeah.
And now LaMelo tried to give it back with a really stupid foul.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Gordon Hayward, I don't know what he was doing fouling Devin Booker late in that game.
Mm-hmm.
But here nor there, the Hornets wound up hanging on to win that game. And it's because LaMelo Ball had 7 fourth quarter points and late in the game was just terrorizing the Suns.
Yeah.
Going to the basket, driving and kicking, driving and dunking, driving and making layups.
Mm-hmm.
LaMelo Ball is close right now to being the best young point guard in this class.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand there's a lot of young talent. That kid is proving every naysayer wrong.
He is.
And if you are the T-Wolves right now, you're probably not second-guessing that pick.
You're not, no.
But, boy, the Hornets feel fortunate that they got LaMelo Ball.
I think LaMelo Ball is a flashier pick than Edwards was, but Edwards is a more complete player, in my opinion. He's stronger. He's got a better body to take the pounding that the league is going to give you as a player. And I think that he can do more for you. But I think LaMelo is an incredibly exciting player. I think he is, yeah, proven all the haters wrong. And I think that, you know, he can be a long-term solution for Charlotte, which is what matters.
But ask yourself this question. What if you're a Golden State Warrior right now?
Mm-hmm.
You drafted James Wiseman.
Which is what they needed,
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But is that what they're going to need in 3 years when LaMelo Ball is the best point guard in the NBA?
Maybe. I don't know. I think it's easy to look back. But what I'm sitting here looking at, if I'm the Warriors, is, hey, Klay's going to come back. We'll have Steph. Don't know if we'll have Draymond still or not, because there's trade talk around Draymond after what happened. But you have Wiseman, and I think Wiseman is a perfect candidate to be the next AD or Karl Anthony Towns or those kind of guys who are athletic, mobile big men.
And my point is, you can't have too many guards on the floor right now in the NBA.
Yeah.
So I think that would have been interesting. I think the Hornets got very fortunate here because – they right now are close to being a playoff team. They're in every single game. They're not getting blown out very often.
No.
They go up against the elites like the Jazz. They fought the Jazz for 3 quarters, and then the Jazz torched them in the fourth.
And that is what you would expect out of a young team in Charlotte.
Exactly.
I mean,
right.
You would expect them to put up a good fight, and then at some point, whether that's, you know, headed into the half or headed into the fourth quarter, whenever it is, you would expect a team like the Jazz to kind of take over. But, yeah.
Are they the best team in the NBA right now?
The Jazz?
Yeah, I don't know how you say they're not.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're the best team in the NBA right now. Absolutely. There's no question about it.
On February 25th.
Yeah, you know, so, like, yes, they are, and Jazz fans should be excited, but at the same time, like, be cautiously optimistic. Like, I think if you're not an avid NBA fan, you don't know what it means that playoff basketball is different than regular season basketball, that it totally changes. The intensity is way higher. The games are way higher, or the games are played completely differently. So, yes, they are the best team in the league right now. They absolutely are. But like I said on the show yesterday, just because you gave an ass-kicking to a depleted Lakers roster doesn't mean that all of a sudden you should be a favorite to win the NBA Finals. You know, you got the Clipper game the other night is the best benchmark game that I've seen them play almost all season, because that was a fully healthy Clippers roster, and that's a potential playoff matchup.
Should I read some YouTube comments?
Yeah, I'm sure they're all pissed off. I mean,
no, we actually got an avalanche of "your show's great, don't listen to the haters" yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But one stood out to me in the negativity.
Okay.
Mitchell said on our the podcast yesterday, Mitchell said, "It's as if you guys don't watch games. I listen to you every day, and I know you watch the games. I know you see the plays. How can you be so lost on Rudy Gobert? Saying that he has no place in the game in the final 5 minutes makes you look stupid. Stop saying that." Okay, and we get this a lot.
Who the f*** is that guy?
Mitchell, go to your room. No, I'm kidding. We get this a lot. The Gobert conversation.
Yeah.
Tell me how I'm wrong. Because I'm the one who says that. I own up to it. I freely admit it. I don't believe that Rudy Gobert has a place in the game in the last 5 minutes.
And what is that? Why do you say that? Maybe that's the
because
more important side of it.
Because he cannot play at pace, and he has zero abilities offensively.
Okay.
The only reason you would have him in the game offensively in the last 5 minutes is you're hoping that he gets a second chance tip.
Mm-hmm.
He gets a tip dunk. He bats a ball out to keep a possession alive.
Mm-hmm.
Because offensively, he has no mid-range game. He has no elbow jumper. He offers you very little.
Doesn't have back-to-the-basket game.
Cannot. Really, the only thing he can do is set a pick high. Because he isn't a guy that rolls to the basket because he does not. The other thing that I think that a lot of people, you know, crush me when I say it, Rudy Gobert is not a great catcher of the basketball on the move.
The he ball, can catch lobs, but he's not great at catching.
In traffic, he does not catch the ball well.
Yeah.
And my old coach, good old sappy Ron Sopocek at Round Lake High School, 1947.
Sopocek.
Used to say, if you can listen and catch the basketball, I can have you on my team.
Mm-hmm.
He used to say that all the time. If you can't catch the basketball, you cannot play in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Rudy Gobert clearly can play in the NBA. In the last 5 minutes, he's not a guy. DeAndre Ayton, everybody says, oh, he's a wonderful offensive player who's evolved. Look how tall he is in those muscles. Well, what good is he on defense?
Mm-hmm.
Because LaMelo Ball made a fool of him yesterday.
Right.
And Monty Williams committed some Monty on Monty crime yesterday. When what did he say? DeAndre got exposed.
Yep.
We have to do better because you can't have the point guard switching to the center.
Yeah.
When did we see that? I don't know. Patrick Beverley in the corner in L.A. against Rudy Gobert. So you can get pissed that I say Rudy Gobert doesn't have a place. LeBron last night dropping Rudy Gobert. You can get pissed that I say that Rudy doesn't have a place in this game in the last 5 minutes. Tell me how I'm wrong about that.
Yeah.
And I'll again say these, oh, well, let me take him out on the offense and put him in on the defense. That shit does not work.
Yeah.
Because you don't have time, and it's just not quick enough.
Yeah.
And you know what, Barry? Exactly right. Barry, the New York Knicks fan. I appreciate you do that. Barry, the New York Knicks fan, says the center died with Patrick Ewing. He was the last guy who could play offense and defense, but only because there was a lot of post-up play. Nobody posts up anymore. Being 6'5 is more valuable than 7 feet.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of credence to that in the NBA right now.
I would agree.
Being 6'5 and a guard gets you a lot more. Look at Book.
Yeah.
Another dominant performance last night.
Yeah. I there's no question that the league is a fast-paced league now. It's not a big man's league. And I think if you are a big, you absolutely have to have a jump shot. And that's why I'm so fascinated as to why they paid Rudy. Because you're paying a guy who can't shoot the basketball, literally can't shoot it. I mean, his free throw numbers are not good, and all he can really do is roll to the basket and set a pick on the offense. That's about it, and he cleans up. But other than that, he doesn't provide you flexibility offensively. You can't. Last night, Marcus Gasol at the beginning of the game hit three threes in a row and kept the Lakers in the game early. And Rudy can't do that. You know, now I'm not saying that Marcus Gasol is better than Rudy, because I think Rudy, you know, the defense that Rudy provides you, yeah, does give you a lot. It saves you time and possessions. But I can't get over the fact that you literally have a guy on offense who can't shoot the basketball.
Well, Duran Wellesley says Rudy's screening and rolling frees up the entire offense. That's true. There's no doubt. He's not a threat on the roll in the last 5 minutes of the game. And the other thing is lethal as he can be, Rudy Gobert can be defensively, in the last 5 minutes, teams isolate him to pull him away from the basket.
Yeah.
And it's very effective. Again, I don't mean to keep going back to the Clipper loss. It's exactly textbook what the Clippers did to get a matchup of Pat Bev versus Rudy Gobert. And what did Rudy do? Rudy let Pat Bev stand in that corner so that he could guard the paint.
Mm-hmm.
So what did the Clippers do? Drive, kick, splash.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Bev hits the open three.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have that. It's again, the Suns and DeAndre Ayton last night. DeAndre Ayton switches on to LaMelo. LaMelo, first time drives, hammer dunk. Second time drives, kicks to Miles Bridges, who splashes a three. The league is changing.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of respect for Rudy Gobert's game. All but the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't think I'm saying that the guy sucks. I'm just saying he has to understand that.
And I think in the postseason, what you're going to see is you're going to see teams try to exploit him more during the game, not just in the last 5 minutes. And I think, again, I'll just keep saying it too. At some point, there will be a team that figures out how to get the Jazz into foul trouble early in a game. Because what we've seen is when they're in foul trouble, they're a lot easier to deal with because their prime shooters are on the bench. You know, you can do some nice things. And so when I look at a team, I don't know why for the life of me, people are not going after Rudy Gobert to get him in foul trouble.
Oh, I think they are. I think they are. I mean, absolutely. Ben Simmons did. The Sixers did.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The Hornets did. I think teams try, but the problem is the Jazz passed the basketball so well. I mean, we saw it last night, pick and roll with Spida Mitchell,
mm-hmm.
and he has Rudy open for a lob. Did he throw it to him?
No.
What did he do? He kicked it to the corner to Bogdanovich, who splashed a three.
Yeah.
Because that, Quinn Snyder will say it until he's dead. You cannot shoot enough threes right now in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
So they're always looking for that three.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, I think at times, the Jazz are better without Rudy Gobert on the floor.
Yeah.
Because they get quicker. Now, the problem is that what you bring in is not better than Rudy Gobert.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, Derek Favors, with all due respect, I love
him. He has a use, but he's not better.
He can't play 35 minutes a night.
Yeah.
Right? And you don't want him to. He's a guy who can defend a little bit, and if you leave Malone, he's going to dunk on you.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the Jazz use him. He's got a bit of a touch on the jumper.
Yeah.
So he has some use, but what happens is they play faster. They play with more speed.
Yeah.
They play with more quick. They play in more space.
They get easier buckets.
Yeah, when Rudy's not on the floor.
And that's my biggest concern for this team. You know, and again, this is something we've talked about pretty consistently. What's going to happen in the postseason when they don't shoot well, because that is going to happen.
That's
going
to happen.
That's going to happen. It happens.
We saw
every
that for
year.
Three quarters against Charlotte.
Yeah, where they just didn't shoot well, and then all of a sudden,
going in the hole.
I mean, weren't they down to Charlotte? Weren't they down at one point
17
by like,
or something?
Yeah, like close to 20.
Yeah,
and then they had to shoot their way back into the game, and they did, and they won the game and everything. So nobody talks about it. But imagine what would happen against a fully healthy Clippers team when you shoot like that and you get behind by 20. You're not coming back on the Clippers like that. I just don't believe that. They're just a superior team.
Yeah.
To Charlotte.
Real quick before we move off of NBA.
Yeah.
Why do the Suns continually have trips down the floor where Book doesn't touch the ball and when the game's on the line? I was watching that last night. I think you even texted me.
Yeah.
I was so frustrated watching them not give the ball to Book.
Everybody talks about how smart Chris Paul is. How does Booker not touch the ball on a possession if you're the Phoenix Suns? How does that happen?
You got me, man.
How does that happen?
You got me. I don't know. I really don't know.
I'm not saying that Book is the best player in the league, but when he's making three-point shots and getting fouled and then hitting the free throw and he's hot, like,
that
how
was
do you
incredible.
Not feed him?
Incredible.
Like, how do you not feed one of the best scorers in the league, man?
And by the way, that was a foul on that last shot.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't call it.
Well, of course not. It's the last shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. How good do you think LaMelo Ball can be? Seriously.
I think LaMelo Ball has potential to be a borderline Hall of Fame guy at the end of his career. I think that he needs to get stronger. I think he needs to avoid injuries in his career because, again, my biggest concern with him is that he is a slender guy. He is not, like, built out yet. So I think that when his body catches up to the league, he has potential. You would, huh?
Sorry.
Yeah. You know, he has potential to be the best of the best because he's an elite passer. He's got great court vision. And by the way, I don't know if you guys watched him last night, but that confidence is only going up with the jumper. And he was already a confident guy coming into the league.
It is going up. Absolutely,
so
it's going up.
I think he's got that potential in him, but we'll just have to see who he plays with over the course of his career, where he goes. Is he with Charlotte for 10 years or 3 years? Like, it really all depends.
All right. Smash that subscribe button on YouTube, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show on YouTube. Jake, I'm going to throw this ball up to you, and then I'm going to go pee. Should the NBA change the logo from Jerry West to Kobe Bryant? Because Kyrie Irving yesterday said he believes that should happen because the NBA is built by black players.
Mm-hmm.
Should they make the logo Kobe Bryant?
Well, I think the first thing with the Kobe Bryant conversation is that Kobe, the death of Kobe changed things, right? The death of Kobe put us all in a position where we felt like we lost somebody. So I think when you ask the question, should we make Kobe Bryant the NBA logo? We should not make Kobe Bryant the NBA logo just because he died and he passed away and we want to continuously honor his legacy. We should not do it for that reason. Now, we should do it more to Kyrie's point, because if you think about it this way. When you think about the NBA, you don't think about Jerry West. You don't think about Bird, or I don't, right? I think about Kobe. I think about Jordan. I think about Magic Johnson. I think about LeBron James. I think about Kareem. I think about Wilt. I think about all of these guys who made the NBA. And I think it's a fair point. And you know, in a time when race relations in this country is at an all-time high once again, I think it's a very valid point.
But why, if you're the NBA, why are you going to completely change your brand because of public perception? Jerry West has always been the logo.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry West and his generation, I don't know, are they as imperative or important in the history of the NBA as, you know, Magic and Bird and Michael? Probably not. But they are the reason that Magic, Bird, and Michael got to do what they got to do. There is no question that Jerry West is one of the best players in the history of the NBA.
Mm.
I just don't see a real reason to do this. I don't see a real reason. Listen, if you're telling me that the NBA needs to honor black culture, I agree with that, right? Like, you look at the black history shirts they're wearing.
Yeah.
You look at the community activism. I don't think that's enough. I agree with that. The Black Lives Matter stuff in the bubble on the floor was great.
Yeah.
But I don't know that that's enough. I think there's an issue with race equality in front offices. I agree. You should go and get that. You should go after that. You should fix that. If you want to broaden the voices of black men in the NBA, I agree with that. But why are you going to change the logo? Like, I would have no problem with it, frankly. I'm not offended by it, or it's not like that. I just don't know why you would do that. You don't change your brand over pressure. When you have done, Jerry West has done nothing. Jerry West does not represent racism.
Right.
What is the overwhelming reason to do
this? He doesn't represent racism, but he also doesn't represent equality. And that's the point. It's not about what Jerry West is doing or not doing. It's about the face of the NBA, the logo, everything. You know, everybody knows the NBA logo. It's not a secret. It is the face of the NBA. Is a white player from, what, 50 years ago now? You know, like, it's not any shade to Jerry West. It almost has nothing to do with Jerry West outside of the fact that he is the logo right now. It's more to me with what Kyrie is saying and what the conversation's been in the league. You know, with equality, I think it's more about saying, hey, this league was predominantly built on black stars, guys who were black players who dominated the league and took the league to where they are. I feel like it is, as much as you want to say that Jerry West is the reason that Michael did his thing, there, that Michael is potentially the greatest player of all time. Yeah, I mean, then
change the logo to Michael Jordan.
Yeah, whatever you want to do. What I'm saying is that, again, it's like I said, we shouldn't make it Kobe just because Kobe died and we want to honor his legacy.
Right.
We should make it, if it's going to be Kobe, it should be about the fact that Kobe was a black basketball player who came from nothing and became one of the greatest NBA basketball players we've ever seen. If that's what you want the league to be about, which I think is a lot about like what LeBron's work off the floor has been about and like what a lot of these guys are doing, then that's why you would make it Kobe. But it can't just be, oh, well, Kobe died, so we got to make him the logo. That's not good enough. Like, that just sells him short, in my opinion.
Well, and I also think you sell the black movement short if you believe that creating a logo or making Kobe Bryant the logo signifies equality.
Because mm-hmm.
I don't think that's necessarily the case. Is the league predominantly... you know, populated with black players? Yes, it is. Has the league been built, you know, by black players? Partially. Absolutely. But who was more important, Magic or Bird? I would say that they were equally as important. You know, when you look at the history of this league,
right?
I just don't think that changing the logo accomplishes much. I really don't.
Well, that's a different conversation then. I mean, I can get down with that. Like, does changing the logo actually make a significant difference? Well, yes or no. It depends who you ask. I agree. I don't think it actually, you know, in reality changes that much. But it's not about, again, like the thing I want to make sure is super clear. It's not about like comparing Magic to Bird. The conversation is not like, did Magic do more for the game than Bird did? The conversation is, hey, the black stars in this game outnumber the white stars like 10-1. I mean, you know, Magic, Michael, Kobe, LeBron, like all these guys that have transcended the game,
sure,
are way outnumber the, you know, white guys, if you will, or white basketball players that transcended the game. Now, there have been a ton of awesome white NBA players. You know, you look at, Steve Nash or Larry Bird or, you know, Jason Kidd in his heyday was amazing. You know, like you look at all these guys, they did great things. But I agree with Kyrie that this league was built on the black basketball player. They transcended the game. They made it what it is today. And he has a case there. But I tend to agree with you that I don't know that means that we got to go changing the logo.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting conversation, by the way, overwhelmingly, because Twitter defines everything and sets social policy. 70% to 30% say do not change the logo.
Twitter's been going crazy.
I just don't know that this accomplishes what, I don't know what Kyrie's trying to accomplish. Elevating the stature of the black player in the history of the NBA, I think is important. Absolutely. I mean, and I know that a lot of people have said that black players have made millionaire white owners billionaires. That's not untrue. I mean, that's not untrue. And I think that this is not unique to the NBA. Mm-hmm. If you look at the NFL, if you look at the history of racism and racial abuse in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not unique to the NBA for certain.
But
the difference with the NBA is the NBA is deeply seated in the black community.
Yeah.
Through the shoe culture, the hip hop culture, the fashion culture, the influencer culture, LeBron James opening charter schools. That's a great example.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to say that, you know, current black players have far more influence than the previous generation of NBA ballers, I would agree with that. Michael Jordan never took a stand on anything.
Right.
Right? You have a guy like LeBron James calling out the president of the United States, but only because Twitter is a powerful medium.
Right.
Right? So that's why that happened. I just don't think changing the logo of the NBA to the silhouette of a black player accomplishes what you're hoping to accomplish.
Yeah.
That's my point. A lot of people are in into this. Giggity says, nothing to add to this discussion, but glad I'm back home and able to listen to you guys live again. Giggity, what's up,
up, my guy?
It has been too long, Giggity. Good to hear you. Eric in Raleigh says, Bird walking off with the one finger in the air after the three-point contest should be the logo. I think Larry Bird is a very interesting conversation because if we look at influential players, Magic and Bird absolutely changed the trajectory and the fortunes of the NBA. Why are you sighing?
Because that's not the point. It's not about Bird or it's not about that. It's about the idea that the league, for the most part, the majority of what the NBA has done in its history is black players. That's what it's about. It's not about Bird walking off.
History.
No, in all of history.
I don't know about
how,
that.
Okay. Try make me an argument that there are more white players in history that have done more for the league than black players. Because I don't think you can make that argument.
I just don't think you can. I think the most important era in the NBA was the Magic and Bird duel. I think that era brought fans to the television. I think Larry Bird versus Magic Johnson started in college and finished in the NBA. It was an absolutely pivotal part of saving the NBA during the 80s was on the, or, you know, the 70s, excuse me, was on the brink with players that were drug addicted and lawless.
Mm-hmm.
There were fights on the floor. Like, I mean, the 70s was not kind to the NBA. Mm-hmm. If Magic and Bird do not emerge and duel the way they dueled, boy, this league's in trouble.
Yeah.
And yes, are there foundational black players? Yes, absolutely. But because of recent events, should we forget about what white players did in the NBA? That's not how it works. We should not have to eliminate one thing to prop up another. Just because you want to further the cause of the black player in the NBA does not mean that you have to push down the white player. Did white owners push out black players early in the league's inception? Absolutely. But that's across all racial spectrums, all social economic spectrums. Like, you name it, that happened in the 40s, 50s, and 60s in this country. It changed in the 70s and really began to, you know, gravitatingly, you know, pull the black man forward in the 80s to a certain extent, especially in the NBA.
Yep.
But if we're changing the logo to one player, it's Michael Jordan, period. Yep. And I love Kobe. I covered Kobe. I watched him win championships.
Yeah.
I was 3 feet away when they won their first championship. I was a foot away when he lobbed that ball to Shaq against Portland.
Yeah.
I know that team inside and out. I love Kobe Bryant. But that's honoring Kobe Bryant is for the Lakers. The NBA has given him the All-Star Award. Like,
they've done a lot.
They've done a ton. If you're going to change the logo, which I do not think you should, make it Michael Jordan, not Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, I'm you fine know, like, with that. Yeah, I don't think that the white player in the league has outdone what the black player in the league has done for generations.
But why do we have to outdo what one another has done?
Because when you're talking about the face of the NBA, which is the NBA logo, it is a white player in Jerry West, right? Why is it a white player in Jerry West?
Because Jerry West at the time, I think, fit the bill.
At the time.
When that logo was made.
Yep.
But that is an iconic logo.
Right. I understand it, but that's the point. This is what I'm saying. This is what Kyrie is saying. It is an iconic logo, but it's also 50 years old now. It's also, you know, archaic at this point, almost, you know? So does my kid is never going to watch Jerry West or have any appreciation. Hell, I haven't watched much Jerry West.
You have zero appreciation for, and with all due respect, you're a millennial. This is a millennial issue. I think millennials have a very tough time appreciating what happened before they arrived. Now, I was born in 1973. It was an incredibly pivotal time in the United States. I was coming out of the JFK, RFK, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, assassinations, murders, right? Like, the race wars were at their prime. The generation, the decade right before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
A millennial that's born in the 90s, you guys have no idea what the 80s were like, what the 70s were like, because nobody's made you focus on that history.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is that I think your generation in particular has to work hard to appreciate what came before you.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this on a number of subjects. I just don't think that you can say the NBA, well, without black players, the NBA is not here. Well, without
That's
white players.
Fact.
Well,
that
without,
is a fact.
Hey, I got news for you. Without the white player, the NBA is not here. And I agree that black players have suffered oppression, have been denigrated, have been held back, have had opportunities taken from them. And I agree that I would say from the time that Michael Jordan got in this league, the black player has risen to prominence and has been the building block and the springboard to the future.
That's definitely true. Yeah.
The modern era of the NBA is all about the black player.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. But it is wrong to write off the entire history of the NBA to honor Kobe Bryant.
And that's what you think we're doing by changing the logo.
I do.
Well,
I do. I think you are largely trying to marginalize an era of NBA basketball that frankly was spectacular. And I agree it was different. I've always said this about the Celtics, and I know that this pisses off C's fans. That's cool that you won 86 championships in a row, but you only did that because there was not the talent depth was not there.
Right.
Right? So yeah. I agree that the game has changed, that the style of the game has changed. Like, all of this has changed.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that we don't need to remember or continue to honor those who came before us.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to change that logo again,
I agree, it shouldn't be Kobe. I agree with that. I mean, if you're going to change it, yeah, I agree it should be Michael.
Sean says on YouTube, it's just time for a change. On the Jazz, Wang's 2002, Ponks. Okay, that name's tough to say. Wang's.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Says, dumbest talk show. Jazz would not win this much without Gobert. Jazz three-point shooting is very effective because Gobert inside threat. He's not an inside
threat. He's not,
dude. Rudy Gobert is in no way, shape, or form an inside threat other than to dunk the basketball. And the only way that he gets his opportunities is because when you shoot a lot of threes, you usually miss probably 55% of the threes that you take.
Or half.
And he, more than half of the threes you take, you miss.
Yeah.
And you're still elite, by the way, at that number.
Yeah.
His cleanup ability is the thing that makes him effective.
Yeah.
But you look at the best teams that he plays against or the smaller teams he plays against, he is a 10 and 12 guy.
Yeah.
He's a 10 and 15 guy, 10 points, 15 boards. Absolutely value in that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, in the last 5 minutes of the game, he has no place. That's why Quinn doesn't play him very much in the last 5 minutes.
Completely agree.
He's not a great free throw shooter.
He's a let's intentionally foul him so he'll miss.
Yes. Guy. Yeah. And it's not like Rudy Gobert sucks.
No. And that's what I think a lot of people do that. Oh, well, you guys saying he's not valuable in the last 5 minutes. That means you said he sucks. We didn't say that. We're saying that he doesn't have a use in the last 5 minutes because of what teams do against him.
Yeah. William says, I listen to you guys every day. And while I disagree with your Jazz takes, I've come around on Rudy Gobert. I agree he is limited in certain situations, and those situations are magnified. I think you meant magnified, not magnificent. Are magnified against elite teams.
Correct.
That's exactly right.
That's a great take.
That's exactly right. Those limitations for Rudy Gobert are magnified in the last 5 minutes, especially against teams like the Clippers and
Lakers.
In
a tight game, that can make all the difference. And that's why in a tight game against an elite team, otherwise known as a playoff series, that's why you're going to see Quinn be really aggressive with taking him out or putting him in, and it's really situational.
My guy Matt Cordero in San Diego says, do you think the Jazz can take them in a 7-game series with a healthy AD, though? Boy, that would be fun to watch.
I think it'd be a hell of a series. I do think it would not be a 7-gamer. I think it'd be a 6-gamer. And I think that this is where LeBron's intelligence comes in. And I think that the Lakers, when they are fully healthy, are a beast of a team. And they play completely different.
And by the way, I think they miss Schroeder just as much as they miss AD.
Mm-hmm.
He is a fly under the radar guy. You know, like Eric and Raleigh says Jordan's dunk with his legs spread should be the logo.
Completely agree.
Yeah. All right. Let's wrap up by talking about Donald Trump, the Russian asset. What do you make of this story? If you didn't hear this story, let me get into this a little bit. It's been around for a year or so, I believe, but it really has become prevalent the last week or so. A former KGB agent, which is the Russian secret police, essentially. A former KGB agent is saying that Donald Trump was compromised and turned into a Russian asset in 1987. And immediately people are like, oh, fuck that. That's not true. Donald Trump. Okay. But what do we know about the Russians and the KGB, the secret police for the Russians? Number one, the KGB was known, especially in the 80s and 90s, to leverage powerful American men that were affluent, and Donald Trump certainly would be described as affluent in 1987.
Yeah.
Multi-millionaire, real estate tycoon. And what they would do is they would catch them in scandal. So they would send them hookers. They would send them money or catch them in a financial scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And it is said by this former KGB agent that the Russians did not only one, but both to Donald Trump and turned him into a Russian asset in 1987.
Excellent strategy, sir.
Well, and that strategy came to be. And so what we now know, if you believe this, it also is why Sergei Kislyak, the Russian ambassador, was in the Oval Office, and Donald Trump was talking to him about, oh boy, my wife is going for the
dude,
gamer.
She's getting on the game.
Ghost
she's
gamer.
Getting on it.
Gamer.
Let's
yeah,
go.
Gamer, baby.
Let's go.
Anyway, the point is, Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak was in the Oval Office, and Donald Trump was giving him classified information, which would never, ever happen under any other American president. So, Jake, do you believe that Donald Trump was a Russian asset?
Yeah, I don't have any doubt about it. Trump is somebody who is easily manipulated. He's somebody that lives in an alternate reality, clearly based on the things that he said and the way he operates. And I think that when you do that to yourself and that's where you are mentally, you're easily manipulated. So I'm not surprised to hear this. It is very frustrating and concerning to me from a national security perspective that we're just, you know, that Donald Trump is just handing over, hey, there's the classified information file cabinet. Why don't you just go ahead and take whatever you want? And then after I'm done with the cocaine and hookers that you gave me, I'll meet you in Moscow. Okay, sound good? All right, yeah, sound good. See you in about 20 minutes. I mean, that's essentially what we're talking about here, man. Like, hey, we're going to send Donald Trump, because we believed him to be a fool and somebody that we can compromise, we're going to send him drugs, and we're going to send him women, and then we're going to take a bunch of pictures of him, and we're going to blackmail him, and we're going to exploit him, and we're going to make him do what we want him to do. And then all of a sudden, what do we get? Donald Trump, 30 years later, is voted president, and yet he's still leveraged by the Russians. So what have the Russians done? They've infiltrated our government at the highest levels. And that, to me, is deeply frustrating. Deeply frustrating.
Yeah, I have no doubt that this is a real possibility. I can't say without question it's true. Donald Trump's actions, boy, they make you think it's true.
Yeah.
They make you believe that he was leveraged as a Russian asset. There is just no other reason.
I think he's still leveraged, to be honest with you.
As do I. I don't think that, well, once you're converted, they're not going to let you go.
No.
They're going to, but if you listen to the stories, right? And the other thing that I think a lot of Trump supporters don't want to embrace on this, you have to go back to the election in 2016 where he won. And you got to believe that all of these leaks, the WikiLeaks, the emails, the supposed influence on social media, that Trump all of a sudden had all this power on social media through algorithms. I'm telling you, the Russians had a massive influence on the 2016 election.
Mm-hmm.
The moment he got into office, they tried and tried and tried.
Yeah.
And thankfully, the layers of checks and balances in our government helped.
Yeah.
But not, I mean, how do you explain, A, that he got elected, B, that there has been so much misinformation on Facebook and Twitter?
Oh, the Russians are intentionally doing that. There's no doubt.
That he has never questioned Vladimir Putin on anything. How do you explain that Vladimir Putin and China absolutely propped up Kim Jong-un in North Korea to the point where it's spectacularly fucking frustrating that Donald Trump offered Kim Jong-un a ride on Air Force One?
It's embarrassing, dude.
Because he cannot fly, and to get to the summit, Kim Jong-un had to take an arduous train trip through China.
Yeah.
And Donnie's like, hey, why don't you hop on the jet? We'll take you home. And for some reason, Kim Jong-un refused.
Yeah.
Right? All of these meetings, we now know, were set up and pushed by the Russians and the Chinese. Right? You look at the fact that the Chinese have significant influence over the Trump family's business layers, whether it's real estate or fashion or...
Yep.
You're starting to realize now that the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. is on the verge of bankruptcy because their bookings have completely fallen out.
Yeah.
Because nobody needs to stay there to gain interest and leverage over the White House.
Yeah. So,
like, there's all this evidence that says it's true.
Yeah, that's why I say I don't really have a doubt. I mean, it's right here in front of us.
You're not questioning, you know, Vladdy Putin. You're not questioning Putin on why he put bounties on American soldiers' heads.
Nope.
You're not like you're all of the you know, the dictator brands, like Khashoggi. You're not questioning the Saudi crown prince on Khashoggi.
You're letting the Iranian nuclear program continue to grow, which is what the Russians want. So, you know,
there's a lot of people who believe that America pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord under pressure from China, mm-hmm. who wants nothing to do with that because it will cripple their economy.
Yep.
Like, you have all of this information and all of these, you know, all of these incidents that tell you that, yeah, I think there is an 85, 90% chance that Donald Trump was absolutely leveraged to this day as a Russian operative asset starting in 1987.
Yeah, I agree.
You
know,
it's,
and it just is, I don't really have a lot of nice things to say. I think that it's embarrassing for our country. I think that the fact that potentially a Russian operative, somebody who was leveraged by the Russians,
yeah,
got into the Oval Office for 4 years is deeply concerning, man. That's, I mean, that is the absolute worst of the worst. You're talking about somebody who has access to every classified file the CIA ever has in existence.
Yes.
You're talking about nuclear launch codes. You're talking, I mean, you're talking about all this stuff.
Am I the only one that's amazed that we made it through the Trump presidency?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, dude. Like, that's why I'm like, last night, it's funny, I was thinking about this and I'm like, man, like, I don't watch CNN as much just because now I don't have to worry about there being a nuclear war every 5 minutes.
Yeah,
you know?
Don't have to follow Twitter every 5 minutes to figure out what our, you know, what our foreign policy is.
Yeah, so,
you know, like,
it's just, it's frustrating, but yes, I'm glad we're past his presidency, not just because I didn't vote for him, but because I think that we are in a better place.
Breaking news.
Well, this was only a matter of time.
The Manhattan District Attorney officially takes possession of Donald Trump's tax returns and related records. Shame. It's amazing. What do you think we find out from his tax returns?
A lot. I think we find out that he's been cheating for years. I think we find out, I think his tax returns will link him to different situations financially. So, like, I think, you know, and I'd have to go and look up some situations or some things that were shady. But basically what tax returns have the ability to do is show you, A, yes, he's not paying taxes, but B, that he was involved in different things that he shouldn't have been. And I think that that can get you in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think there's one thing that we're going to find out about, that he's cheated on his taxes for decades.
Yeah.
And I think he owes, you know, I think it's hundreds of millions of dollars to the IRS at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And when they unwind his tax returns, I think you're going to find that he committed bank fraud.
Yeah.
I think you're going to find that he committed
tax fraud. The Deutsche
thing,
I think, is going to come up big.
The Deutsche Bank situation will come out in those tax returns.
Yeah.
And I, you know, oddly enough, I don't know how many, have I ever told you that? I used to work for Deutsche Bank.
No, I didn't.
I was a collector.
Are you a Russian operative?
You know, they asked, and I, you know, I was like, nah,
fuck
off.
Was it that they didn't have Foot Locker connections?
No, you know, anyway, no, I'm going to stop. I worked for Deutsche Bank in the mid-90s as a collections, a collector for auto loans on their German brands.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Grant Fuhr?
Kind of.
The goaltender, the legendary goaltender.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
I even got to talk to Grant. I got to talk to a lot of famous people on the phone working at Deutsche Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of athletes don't pay their car loans on time when they're out of contract.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so anyway, point is, I think what we're going to find out is that he committed bank fraud. I think he committed real estate fraud. I think he committed tax fraud.
Uh-huh.
I think that Donald Trump has absolutely put his children in a position where they could be going to jail. I think a lot of what's in these tax returns is going to screw Ivanka.
Yeah.
If Donald hasn't already, I should stop. As a consultant, paying her as a consultant when it was not allowed and claiming her as a consultant, and claiming her tax-free, claiming her as a dependent, claiming her as an employee. Like, there's, you know, people believe that he claimed her 7 different ways on his tax returns over the years, which you cannot do.
You can't do that, yeah.
And that, what does that do? That leads her to be put into a different tax bracket. Now, her tax liability is going to go up significantly.
Mm.
And, by the way, he is still the only president to date who has never turned over his tax returns.
Until
and
now.
when you're looking at this, and you're starting to realize that Donald Trump is plotting a 2024 run for president. He is forming a super PAC.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear Ron Johnson yesterday, the senator from Wisconsin, or 2 days ago, get up in these hearings on what happened on January 6th during the insurrection and completely flout lies and conspiracy theories. You know that Donald Trump, as I've said for many years, doesn't care about his tax returns because he knows he's the most powerful Republican in the country right now, and arguably the most powerful Republican in the history of the party, which is why this is no longer my Republican Party.
Yeah.
I've been a lifelong Republican, and I had always voted Republican, and that's, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Breaking news. The IRS now has turned over
the
Donald
DA.
Trump's tax returns.
Yeah. To the DA.
To the district attorney.
Yeah, dude.
Cyrus Vance.
That's rough.
In the Southern District of New York.
Yeah.
This is going to be I think Republican senators are absolutely in a tough situation.
I don't know
do
why
you
everyone's
support
so
him
scared.
Or do you not?
I don't know why everyone's so scared of this guy.
Because, man, he got 74 million votes. He has an incredible amount of reach.
Let's
and influence.
See if he gets 74 million votes when he's in prison for tax evasion.
Well, you got 3 years to do it. And you know what? This is what we're watching here. Every vote counts. If you look at Chicken Neck McConnell saying that he is going to support Merrick Garland as the attorney general, I think that's absolutely a crucial step.
Yeah.
Some Republicans are off the train. And then you have, you know, guys like Lindsey Graham who go down to Mar-a-Lago and golf with him.
Yeah.
You know, you have guys like Ron Johnson who support him with conspiracy theories.
I'm telling you, Trump lives in an alternate reality, man. It's not good. It's borderline mental illness.
I don't think it's borderline mental illness. I think it is mental illness.
Yeah.
And he's not a spring chicken anymore. They say he was on his deathbed with COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, Donald Trump will not lose influence until he is dead.
Well,
it is that simple. I don't
wish anybody ill will, but I wouldn't be crying.
Yeah. Fat Jesus says Donald Trump wrote off golden showers as a medical expense.
Typical.
Them hoes. Fat Jesus, appreciate you, buddy. My guy Giggity, good to see you. William, good to see you. You know.
There are new things coming to the channel very soon.
We'll talk to you. Just fucking relax. We'll talk about it Monday. Big weekend in the entrepreneurial lives for us. So.
Yes. Look forward to Monday.
Until Monday, say, das Fatanya, Donnie.
I don't know what you just said, so have a nice day. We'll